Hello, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. You're listening to the voice of Vashon, 101.9 Vashon Island, Washington. I'm glad you're here, and I hope you can pull up a chair and listen as we chat about all things food-related. My guests today are Heidi and David Skrypek.
Yay!
Hello.
Hello. Hi, David. Hi, Heidi.
We're stirring the honey pot today.
Yes, we are. David and Honey. Hi, Honey. David and Heidi and I had a honey tasting the other day, and we're going to tell you all about that in just a few minutes. First, I have a little bit of business to get out of the way. It's Voice of Vashon's birthday. It's their fifth anniversary of being alive and part of this planet. And we're having a lip sync party at the Red Bike Friday night at 8 o'clock. And I hope that you'll come. It's hilarious. It's fun. You'll see friends you know. You'll see friends you've never seen before do things you didn't think they could. And I think you should go. It'll be really fun. So that's, again, 8 p.m. at the Red Bike. I think tickets are $10, I think. And we need you there. So come, support us. And then one thing I'm trying to do, I'm a little sporadic at it, is talk to you a little bit about new discoveries that I'm making. And, you know, if you've listened to the show at all, you know that I like cooking without recipes sometimes too. And this is a discovery that I made yesterday, actually. So, you know, in the world of no recipe cooking, there's a lot that can be done. And I was introduced to it by a friend of mine in Denver, Colorado. His name was Dan Borg, and he used to make refrigerator soup every Sunday. And usually it was because he had too big of a Saturday night, but he would go in his refrigerator. He and his wife had a glorious food life, and he'd just make soup out of whatever was in the refrigerator. It didn't matter if it was Szechuan and barbecue mixed together with a little bit of something else thrown on top. And I thought, I was looking at my leftovers in the refrigerator, and I had shepherd's pie. And I had Swedish meatballs, and I had some leftover tomato-y Moroccan thing from a dinner that I did last week. And I thought, okay, I'll try that. So I put that all in a pot together and added some more beef broth, put in a little more sour cream, added some thyme. I don't know why, just because it's my favorite thing, but you couldn't taste it at all. And then it looked like it needed noodles, even though it had mashed potatoes in it to thicken it from the shepherd's pie. So I put some noodles in it. And the Moroccan thing is called matbouka, and it's a roasty, toasty, tomato-y, spicy relish kind of thing, and I just dumped that in there. So I tasted it. It had peas and corn and all that in it. It was just fabulous. It was really good. In fact, I would make it again. I served it to myself with green Tabasco sauce. So there's my no recipe cooking and my refrigerator soup in honor of Dan Borg. May he rest in peace. We miss you, Dan. Now, on to the bees. So David, who is an ex-chef and a builder, he's a current builder and a beekeeper. And hi, David.
Hi.
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. And I'm glad you're here. And Heidi is the beekeeper's wife.
Yes.
And she's his assistant in the field. And
yep.
Keeps everything going the way that it's supposed to go. You might recognize Heidi from her show on Voice of Vashon, which is called
Borderlines.
Borderlines.
Reggae on Thursday.
It's a fabulous show. I listen to it all the time.
Thank you.
You went to a wonderful bee symposium in Montreal. Can you tell us a little about that? That was in September.
Yes, Apimondia. It's like the UN of beekeeping.
Wow.
So international, everyone's coming together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was up in Montreal. And all the leading cutting edge science in the beekeeping industry is presented. So you have top-notch scientists in the field presenting all their work, along with some really, really experienced, dare I say, the royalty of beekeeping.
Wow.
Also attends. So it was really fascinating and just so much information to take in. It was overwhelming.
Well, you know, I looked at the schedule. You gave me a calendar of events that were happening over those few days in September in Montreal. And there were symposiums on things like honeybee nutrition and the validation of apitherapy in medicine and all kinds of really interesting things. And I'm sure you couldn't take them all in. But did either of you or both of you walk away with one or two nuggets of information that just stays with you?
Personally, yes.
Yeah.
More than a few nuggets, that's for sure.
Do you want to share one with us?
Let's see, apitherapy, which is basically using the beehive as a medicine cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people can go anaphylactic from a bee sting, for instance.
Right.
And everyone says you need an EpiPen to stop that.
Mm-hmm.
At this conference, we learned from a gentleman from Korea, I think it was, two different ways to stop an anaphylactic attack.
Really?
Without the EpiPen. So you can do them like right here, right now. One is you basically prick the very end of your nose, like those little diabetic
like
testers.
Like a little needle?
Those work perfectly. You just pop that right in the end of your nose and like 4 or 5 drops of blood come out. So that actually helps to release the throat from constricting.
Wow.
Which is really fascinating.
Boy, that's really wonderful to know.
You know, there's also acupuncture points that mm-hmm. you can touch.
Back if you
the
know
head.
Them.
Yeah, if you know them, yeah. you know. So stuff like that, to me, is like, it's gold.
It is gold.
Like, that could potentially save someone's life.
Right.
And like, that's awesome stuff.
Healing power. Yeah. Heidi?
The tools within the medicine cabinet that is the beehive, that mm-hmm. that can save your life. I mean, in so many different ways. Honey, for example, so powerful in wound healing. We actually saw veterinarians presenting case studies of animals with giant gaping wounds, and you couldn't do anything with them except slather them with incredible amounts of honey.
So do you just pour the honey on the wound?
Yeah. They literally was open, you know, to everything. Just mm-hmm. honey. And then it showed over time, the wound healing.
Mm-hmm.
Giant, cavernous, festering wounds, you guys.
Lovely.
Honey, honey, smooth as silk skin afterward.
Wow.
And it was
amazing.
Case after case after case. And we had a dentist present from Uruguay who mm-hmm. showed us the same thing in humans, not in animals. And it was absolutely mesmerizing. So honey's delicious, but it's also incredibly medicinal.
It's really wonderful to think about that as possibility now that people are turning back to some more natural ways of healing.
Oh, yeah.
And we're trying to take care of our bees. Mm-hmm. And I know that we're trying to take care of them here on Vashon, and that the two of you have a lot to do with that.
Thanks.
Can you tell me a little bit, David, about your honey bees and where they live on the island?
Certainly. Excuse me. I have about 40 hives
mm-hmm.
here on the island. So I have about 9 or 10 different apiary locations.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I can just go from location to location and go check on my bees, and really kind of helps out some farmers. I've got a couple on some organic farms here on the island. So it definitely helps them out with pollination. So I've got a lot of different races of bees, and we don't necessarily need to get into mm-hmm, that too mm-hmm. much. However, my bees are a little hot, you might say.
What does that mean?
Meaning they're a little more tempered, short fused.
Oh, really?
Than defensive. Some of your defensive than some of the
okay.
other bees.
Okay.
And I have actually found that kind of, it's not a direct correlation, but usually like the more defensive your bees are, the mm-hmm. better they are at surviving.
Well, that makes sense.
So,
they're fighters.
Yes.
Yeah.
People could always negate that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no true science behind that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an observation I found personally.
That's really interesting. Really interesting. And I know that you have different flavors of honey from different areas of the island. Well, we'll get to that in a minute, because one thing I want to share with our listeners, you know, I know that radio, my friend Susan McCabe says radio is a visual method of communication, and it's up to us to give people who can't see what we have the visuals. We provide the visuals.
We can do it.
We can do it. That's right. So basically, we did David and Heidi and I and Dave Oldham did a wine tasting of honey, like a wine tasting, but it was honey the other day. And we tasted, I think, 17 or 16 different honeys from around the world. I was amazed at the different levels and layers and flavors of honey. I really had no idea. One thing I knew is that I didn't really appreciate anymore the commercial honeys. They're just kind of sweet. That's what they are. But these honeys had all kinds of flavors in them.
A lot of the commercial honeys are pasteurized,
mm-hmm.
so they kill that enzyme that just dances on your tongue, that just really brings that honey alive. You know, so if you have local honey and some store-bought honey, I would say taste them side by side.
Taste the difference.
Because there is a difference.
Yeah,
there
really is a difference. And one short note, I'd like to talk about the organic. You mentioned organic. Mm-hmm. And how can you be organic and be a bee? Because bees fly, you know, where they want to go.
So you need to have bees fly about 5 miles at the most from their hive in any direction.
Is this on every day?
Yes.
Okay.
So when they go out to forage for mm-hmm. nectar and pollen, mm-hmm. you know, and other things, nonetheless. So 5 miles is about as far as they'll go.
Okay.
So if you can have basically a 10-mile circle with a honeybee hive right in the middle of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can ensure in that circle that you're not using any chemicals, you know, then yes, you're on your way becoming organic. Another part of being an organic honey producer is not using chemicals in the hive itself.
Mm-hmm.
And also taking the plastics and the metals out of your hive.
Oh, really?
So there's okay. another component
wow.
there, you know, which is a little
very
tougher sometimes.
Delicate. Yeah. Delicate experience. Well, David, I see that you've brought some with you for us to look at. We've got jars of honey sitting on the counter here, on the kitchen table.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
All right.
With some tasters. And maybe you would like to talk to us about these honeys, and maybe we can taste one or two and talk about it.
Okay.
Which ones did you bring?
Let's see. I obviously brought some nice local honey right from the north end of Vashon.
One thing, excuse me to interrupt you. One thing David did when we were tasting these was we went around the world tasting honey.
Oh, and boy, did we.
We did. And he made a chart for us. First, we started in Vashon, and I don't know where we went then. I don't remember, but we went all the way around the world with all of these different honeys and ended up back on Vashon with the second one. So we'd kind of like to recreate a little bit of that for the listeners. And I encourage you to listen because the remarks that people make when they taste honey are so similar to what they make when they taste wine.
To that end, there's actually a flavor wheel that was developed at UC Davis
mm-hmm.
that emulates the wine wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a honey wheel. And if you just Google UC Davis honey flavor wheel, it will pop up.
So it's not proprietary anymore.
It came from the Robert Mondavi Institute,
okay.
interestingly.
Okay.
And it's fascinating, but there are lots of adjectives to unpack from this wheel, which mm-hmm. we used at our table
we did.
On Sunday. We definitely yeah, indexed we did. It. But most of the time you close your eyes and you just kept going... tasting
and then you have to go wash your fingers off.
Totally.
Really, we didn't taste with our fingers, no. But
no.
We still got sticky.
So let's start on the north end of Vashon.
Okay, let's.
This is from our own apiaries.
Oh, right. So this was harvested just this summer,
mm-hmm.
2019. So I harvested this honey essentially right after the blackberry flow. So this is a predominantly blackberry heavy honey. As you can see, it's kind of, the color is kind of a light creamy color, kind of a little bit on the amber side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to crystallize just the smallest amount. So true honey will crystallize. There are some honeys, you know, that will not crystallize.
Oh.
Like Tupelo, for instance,
oh, really?
To my knowledge, will stay liquid for many, many years. Nonetheless, a true honey does crystallize. So the cool thing about crystallized honey is the different size crystals mm-hmm. in it, meaning some nectars, they influence the crystallization of honey. I think levulose and dextrose
mm-hmm.
Have mm-hmm. a huge impact on the effect of crystallization in the honey. When we taste this honey, I just want you to notice how wonderful the crystals are. You know, when it's starting to crystallize, but it's just going to dissolve in your mouth just so nicely.
You know, it doesn't even really feel like crystals. You can tell there's a little bit in there, but it just melts instantly.
So while we're talking about Vashon mm-hmm. honey, some of the primary floral sources,
mm-hmm.
Especially this honey, blackberry is a big one. It's a big influencer, especially on this island. I mean, there's so much
sure.
of it everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing, in my opinion.
I think it's gorgeous, honey. What else do you have?
Well, let's not go too quick
too
here.
Too fast?
So, excuse me. Oh, loving the aroma on this. It's just a nice, sweet, almost like a sunflower type of aroma. Just really kind of reminiscent of the summertime itself.
I can taste a little green something. Like, I don't know if it's grass or hay, or it's springy tasting, springtime tasting.
Yeah, definitely.
Very good.
I get a little honeysuckle, a little like light straw type of flavor. Also with a little bit of cotton candy.
Imagine definitely. That. Imagine. Yeah.
So very intricate and, you know, very subtle.
Well, it's really interesting too about how it settles in the back of your mouth, way in the back by your jaw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes it's a little like a grapefruit makes that funny feeling back there. And sometimes you get that in honey too at the very end.
Definitely.
It's interesting. Yeah.
I would love to talk about honey that we tried from a faraway place. If we're...
Yeah, let's.
Sure, okay. Let's leave Vashon, essentially. Let's head to South New Zealand.
Let's do it. Another island.
All right. So we're actually going to taste honeydew honey.
Okay.
Which actually isn't nectar. It's the excretion from like the leaf buds. You know, like you see aphids all the time eating all this excretion, and they're actually generating the honeydew per se. Like they eat it and they process it, and dare I say they excrete it.
Mm-hmm. That's a polite way.
And it comes out a lot sweeter from that end. and the bees do collect it, you know, just like they would collect nectar.
Mm-hmm.
So they store it in their honey crop, you know, and they take it back to the hive and they regurgitate it and they process it into honey. So
it's amazing how they figured out to do that, you know, because it's not a flower.
Right. No, not at all.
Really interesting.
Well, when the dearth is on, meaning when there's no flowers, that's generally when you get a lot of these, the leaf bud excretions. Like, it's funny. The Ruby Brink actually called me up this summer and said, there's bees all over my ivy. What's going on? Are they swarming?
What should I do?
You know, yeah, exactly. What should I do? You know, and I talked with them a little bit and I said, well, it sounds like they're just eating the honeydew from the excretion, you know, from the new leaf buds, you know?
So, yeah. And just to clarify, honeydew is not the honeydew melon. We're not talking about the melon.
Right.
We're talking, it's a different term.
Leaves on the beech
leaves
forest
on the trees.
Throughout New Zealand. So, this honey has a deeper kind of amber color. It's a little more viscous and fluid than a lot of the honeys that we tasted the other day together. And if you take a taste of this honeydew honey, it's got a very deep flavor. I taste kind of caramelly, earthy, nutty notes in this. I don't know if you guys had similar notes from when you tasted the other day, but it's really fascinating.
It's really interesting.
It doesn't taste like any kind of wildflower honey that you would be used to. Like, it's very
I thought
different.
It had a little bit of a I say leche quemada because it's like a burnt, kind of a little
burnt
sugar taste to it.
Yeah.
It's just really good.
So this came from the Beekeeper's honey brand, Honeydew Honey, and they say, our honey is sourced from the beech forest and the Canterbury foothills of the Southern Alps.
Oh,
of New Zealand.
Yes. Well, you have to get that. You
it's
have
awesome.
To.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when I taste this, I get a little bit of like wet leather. You know, type
that's
of
that
taste.
Deep taste.
Yeah, deep kind of.
Yeah.
Also a little, dare I say, barnyard flavor?
Yeah.
Well, we had a couple of those. Yeah, it's kind of sulfury.
Yeah. Pretty deep. Kind of like a light raisin type of flavor. So kind of like, again, it's like a darker, more thick and rich flavor.
It's lovely. Lovely. I loved it.
And just wonderfully, like the color again is just wonderful. It's like this brownish caramel, you know, and it just flows off the spoon just so nicely.
It's so interesting how so many of them change or so many different colors for the same product, basically. You know, we think it's honey, but some are kind of red and some are kind of orange and some are kind of brown.
You saw
kind of a fun thing, again, through observation I've seen this, is a lot of the springtime honeys or the early season honeys are really light, you know, like acacia honey. It's like amber white, and that's the springtime honey. Black locust, essentially. Yeah.
So deeper in the later season.
So yes, and then the later in the season you get, the deeper it gets, the more minerals it has.
Mm.
And the fun thing is the lighter honeys are actually more antiseptic. And the darker honeys are higher in antioxidants.
Wow. So we need them all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we need them all.
I mean, the bees know what they're doing, so they know, like, they know this stuff.
Can we go to India now?
Well, let's do
it. I always have wanted to go to India. The closest I've gotten is their honey.
So
that was quite wonderful.
We're going to go to the Sundarban, the biggest mangrove, sort of in the area of West Bengal. And this is from Tropica Honey. We're going to talk about this really cool lychee flower honey.
Oh, the lychee.
So when you tasted this, do you remember your sensations?
I just thought it was really smooth, and it had a taste of, I wrote down tobacco and lychee, or lychee, I'm not sure. But it kind of felt like, smelled and felt like a Sauternes wine, a little thick and sweet. And
I got tobacco.
And you got
in
tobacco,
my notes,
yeah.
And a little kind of menthol, I don't know why. It just had, there was some tea notes and some tobacco notes, and it was really deep and... Yeah, I really liked it a lot.
I did too. Now, what do we know about this honey? Do we know anything more?
I mean, it's really Tropica. Unusual to get honey from the mangrove. It's a really rare treat.
And is it?
India's up and coming. I mean, something really exciting that's happening. That's another takeaway from Appamondia, mm-hmm. where that honey is really helping developing nations with subsisting and supplemental income. They're able to take gray water.
Oh, that's wonderful.
They can make kitchen gardens from their gray
sure,
water.
Sure, of course.
And now they're making a living. I am laughing so hard right now. we have good studio entertainment. But it's true. In places like Tanzania and Ethiopia and India, women are able to now keep bees
right.
and make a living, and
it's fabulous.
They're doubling, tripling their income, and they're developing these awesome economies around honey. It's
and
super
they're doubling
exciting.
And tripling our bees.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps the species, but it also gives more honey, and everybody wins. But yeah, so that's what's happening out there. They're doing really cool things like mustard honey, lychee honey, black cumin flower honey out in India. So that just gives you a little taste of what's happening in another part of the world, in Asia specifically.
You know, I just want to, Dave Oldham, if you're listening, I'm going to read from your notes here. But he, Dave said he felt the color was orange, golden, yellow with a little bit of pink in it.
Yeah.
And that it was sweet. It reminded him of beer.
Yep.
And it had a quick finish on it. So it disappeared.
I want to use your beer note to seg into another honey that we tasted that we did not like.
Okay, good.
We're done with this one already?
Oh, sorry.
Well, no, that's okay.
We're running out of time.
Gotcha.
We got to go.
Not yet, but. but the one that was sort of surprising that we didn't like had a beautiful label and a beautiful bottle, and the label even on the side had its own tasting notes. And then we all tasted it, and we noted that it looked like a mini Guinness in the bottle.
It even has a little bit of foam at the top.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting to me.
Like a head.
That's got a head. A honey head.
A honey head.
Yeah.
And it was from Quebec, where Appamondia was held.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a buckwheat source. And David, what do people say about buckwheat honey?
They either love it or they hate it.
Mm-hmm.
There's generally no middle ground with buckwheat honey.
Linda?
I hated it. I tasted it 3 times, and I know now, after the 3rd time, I don't ever want it on anything.
Yeah.
It's a sulfury... I love dark beer, but I don't like dark honey, I guess. That dark. Buckwheat, maybe.
Mm-hmm. It's very molasses-like.
And medicinal
sure.
at the end. The finish is back in the back of your mouth. Like a tingle. I didn't like it.
I personally love it.
I mean, well, that's good.
It's good, and it's malty. It's deep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a good, like a nice round flavor. Really,
would you like it
really
on toast?
Fills the mouth.
Would you like it on, that's my test, I think.
It is strong
yeah.
for toast. When
but
you think like butter and toast with honey, you
yeah.
know, you generally want that nice floral,
right.
you know, yumminess.
A little bit of lightness.
This is definitely a lot deeper and
so
darker.
Maybe better for baking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, finishing with a sauce or something akin to that.
True.
You know?
Well, as an ex-chef, you know. Well, you're not ever an ex-chef. You're always a cook.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Slave to the rhythm.
Yeah. You know, that's just kind of how it goes. Well, I just think everybody should know there is such a thing as buckwheat honey, and you may or may not like it.
True. There's lavender honey. Should
yes.
we talk about that?
Yes.
Yes. Let's come all the way back to Lavender Hill Farms. Right here on Vashon.
Yes.
I extracted this in the summer of 2019. So.
Oh. Lavender Hill Farm. What a beautiful place it is.
Yes.
And it must make for happy bees up there.
Yeah. The color on this is just a beautiful yellow gold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, again, just one of those summer times, like spring type honeys that just really dance on your tongue.
It's lovely.
It just, it's alive. It's effervescent, you know? It's got like this melon tinge
it
to
is.
It.
It is. It's got a melony there with the honeydew melon. It's kind of got that melony taste.
Yeah, and again, it just dances on your tongue. It's just wonderful.
My completely biased opinion is, you know, we went all around the world the other day tasting all these honeys. Mm-hmm. We got back to that honey from Vashon, and I was like, oh my God, this is the best honey. Yeah. There's a lot of nods, so it's hard to disagree. It's bright, it's alive, it's mm-hmm. floral. It's, mm-hmm. It packs a punch. Like, even though it's a super light honey, it's layered with flavors. Yeah.
You know, one thing I want to get to really quickly before we end is mead. And I know that you're making mead as well.
Mm-hmm.
And mead has a long history. The first recipe is thought to have been 4,000 years old. And it's all been involved in Greek mythology and with the Celts and the Norwegians who drank it out of, you know, elk horns or something like that. And so I want you to talk to me a little bit about mead and how you make it and really what it is. It's so delightfully delicious.
Mead is like honey wine, essentially. Mm-hmm. So how I do it, there's a lot of different ways to do it. However, everything's basically the same. Mm-hmm. So after I extract all the honey, I've got all my wax cappings, mm-hmm. you know, that we're capping the honey. So I'll take that and I'll put it in a 5-gallon bucket and I'll put some water over it. And I'll basically just rinse off all that honey and pour that out. And I'll use that as my base. I'll basically start to let that ferment, you know. You also have to add some other nutrients. I add pollen for the nitrogen.
Okay.
Because the yeast that you're going to eventually pitch it with, and it needs some nitrogen to keep from getting an off flavor. Mm-hmm. If you don't do it just right, you get the really... a phenolic kind of acetone kind of tinge to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not too pleasurable at that point.
Yeah.
But mead that I just bottled today is wonderful. It's just got the silky toffee finish to it that is just to die for.
It's really good. Is it, so if I'm not familiar with mead, do I drink it like a beer? Do I drink it like a wine? How is it? Do you serve it with a meal, or how do you drink mead?
You can drink it always, of course.
Yeah.
I like it slightly chilled, so not quite refrigerator temperature. That's a little too cold. It doesn't allow mm-hmm. the gases, you know, it's a kind of off gas, that phenolic fun stuff.
Okay. Well,
but yes, good stuff.
I'm so sorry we're out of time. Maybe you'll come back and we'll talk about bees some more because there's so much more to say.
Good Lord, yes.
Thank you for joining me and thank you to the listeners. It was great fun.
Thank you for having us here.
Oh, you're so welcome. I loved having you. Yay. I hope you come back. Will you come back?
Only if I'm invited.
You'll be invited. I'm just sure. Okay. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.